sometimes ambition and success is my Napoleon complex.
That's Mark Pagan of the podcast Other Men Need Help.
We're talking about why some men are scared of ambitious women on this episode of The Gender Knot, the podcast where we untangle the new masculinity and femininity. We're your hosts. I'm Naz Shantavakoli-Farr, or Naz in short.
And I'm Jonathan Freeman. And this week we explore why some men are scared of ambitious women, even if they also really like them.
Do you find ambitious women attractive?
I love ambitious women. That's the problem. Yeah, I don't want to date a loafy lady. Like I want somebody who's doing stuff.
Welcome to The Gender Knot. If you're new, this is a podcast where we take a dilemma around gender and we try to shine some light on it, untangle it a little bit, and see if we can even work towards some kind of a solution. So I'm Naz, I'm a journalist based in London, and my co-host Jonathan is in DC. What's up?
It's going great. We have a couple of fantastic bits of news. First of all, we were named one of the top podcasts of the week by Guardian, and our friend and frequent guest, general all-around great American, Dan Carroll, was kind enough to both post a really great write-up and recommend us. And you can catch his podcast, which is fantastic. It's called Fine and Dandy with Dan and Andy.
It's two comedians in LA called Dan and Andy, and they are two cisgendered, white, straight men who try to go through these issues of gender, privilege, race, just all sorts of issues.
And it's comedy.
Comedy, yeah. So you should definitely check it out. It's really, really good. So thanks, Dan. That was wicked. We were like super stoked when we saw what you said about us.
You're the best. And then, of course, our even bigger news is this is the one-year anniversary since Naz and a mic had a fun, fabulous idea of untangling things having to do with gender. I certainly have been privileged to, was, of course, a guest on the best episodes of the first season. But, you know, that's just me.
Yeah, so it was nice getting this Guardian review exactly on the one-year anniversary of this podcast, which is a bit freaky as well. It's like, shit, we've been doing this for this long. But anyway, okay, so before we get on to this week's episode, we've got two quick announcements to make. Announcement number one is that we now have Gender Knot t-shirts. We've teamed up with the people at TeePublic, who make fantastic print-on-demand t-shirts and lots of other really cool merchandise. So yeah, we've got t-shirts in black, we've got them in white. I like to think that they look like late 80s new wave band t-shirts, but yeah, who knows?
So are we going for like a Smashing Pumpkins look, or is it pre that and like more like a Pink Floyd Police kind of look?
No, not. I think even like I'm going to say like Joy Division, but maybe like, ooh, maybe even like a late 70s New York punk look. Actually, who knows? People might look at that and be like,
doesn't look like any of these. Well, anyway, we look forward to you guys buying them and telling us what you think of them. They're $20 each, and the details are on our website, thegenderknot.com. And again, that's K-N-O-T. So don't forget to subscribe, leave a review for the podcast so that we can get the word out to many more people.
And get a t-shirt. Thanks again to the folks at TeePublic who've been doing a really lovely job. So we're excited about that. Announcement number two, our friend Disraeli is fundraising for his upcoming album. Now, he's an MC, he's a musician, he's been on this podcast. We've had some episodes with him. So we had one about why men don't talk and another about can men fail? So Disraeli's been a really open and fantastic guest talking about these issues.
And this is one of the things that is just crippling for men. It's because we don't interact on an emotional level with our fellow males. We don't learn a language to describe ourselves with, and we don't ever get to reflect on what we are like, what makes us happy. And so we just accept the status quo idea of what makes us happy. You know, how do you deal with problems? You deal with problems by going out and drinking, or by, you know, just brushing them under the carpet, or you funnel them into anger, which is like the one acceptable emotional state.
So when Disraeli came to us, he talked to us in those episodes about having had depression and having had a breakdown. And in some ways, that was tied to the masculinity and finding it hard to talk and get support as a man. And I found that, you know, really heartening and really brave about how he was able to bring it up.
Yeah.
And but he's currently busy with this album, which we're hoping is going to be a huge success.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also going to be putting on workshops for men, which I'm really going to be excited to hear about. We've linked to the Indiegogo page here in the podcast notes, and so you can go over very easily and lend your support. The album's called The Unmaster.
Basically, when Disraeli was talking to us, it was all about, like, as a man, you've got to be on top of it, and you've always got to know what you're doing, and you can't really ask for help. And The Unmaster is all about the idea that you don't already have to know, you don't have to be perfect. He says you don't have to be a solitary king coping with things alone. And he says you can be an unmaster in a world of other unmasters, and that it's all right to ask. That's basically a lot of what the album's going to be about. Like Jonathan said, Disraeli's going to be putting on lots of workshops for men. So yeah, he's just doing some really awesome stuff right now. So yeah, head over and lend your support.
And now on to this week's episode. At the end of season two, we looked at why we were scared of ambitious women, and Naz and our fabulous, brilliant co-producer, Sam, which is short for Samantha, had a chat. We also heard from a teacher who talked about how this dynamic plays out in schools from a young age, in terms of boys and girls and how they both relate to authority and how they related even to her. And it fits into our theme for this season, you know, women and work, men and relationships. Obviously, I am after a wife. Naz is after empire building. You know, and I was thinking about it karmically. What probably this means is that I'm going to end up ruling the world and you're going to find a husband because the world has a sense of humor. Anyway, we're going to chat to Mark Pagan of this fantastic podcast, Other Men Need Help. I'm not sure if I'm other men, but I'm looking forward to hearing the podcast and finding out if I am.
So you will have heard Mark on our episode about flawed male heroes, where we talked about what men do when their heroes are flawed. So we talked about people like, you know, Diaz and Louis C.K. But basically, we wanted to chat to Mark about this specific topic because he actually has an episode of his podcast where he goes on a date with an ambitious woman and it kind of freaks him out. So we'll chat a little bit about that in the talk with Mark. But basically, before we get to that, we want to give them a quick shout out too, because Other Men Need Help. They're currently recording their next season and they're looking for interviewees. So if you are any of the following, please get in touch. So they're looking for men who have significantly younger partners.
Or men who can talk about financial insecurities in relation to partners.
If you're a man with a significant other who has had more sexual experience than him, get in touch with them.
Or men who are balding or bald. Who did you talk to when you're losing your hair? I could actually be a guest on that.
They also want to know if there's anything about your appearance that you privately try to change or hide. So if you fit into any of those, drop Mark and his team a line at othermenneedhelp@gmail.com. We've put all these details in the notes to this show as well.
Okay, here's Mark Pagan on why some men are scared of ambitious women.
In one of the episodes of your podcast, you talked about going on a date with a woman and she was really passionate about her job. And the next day you almost bought a sports car. And he said that you realized it was a little bit like having a midlife crisis or something, and that was like your reaction to having been on a date with a woman who was super passionate about her job in a way that you weren't about yours a couple of years back.
That is 100% accurate. Yes. I think it was about 3-4 years ago I re-entered the dating pool. And the relationship that had ended was about, I think it was 4 years. It was about 4 years. Anyway, I hadn't really done online dating before. And when I started, I hadn't really encountered what we all have to do when we enter dating again, which is like sort of promoting ourselves. Like, these are the awesome things about me. This is why you want to hang out with me. Anyway, this was one of the first dates I went on, and I went out with this woman and we had a great time. She was very just who you want to go on a date with, basically. You sit across, you have this awkward situation where you're eating like flatbread pizza and you have to just talk. Mm-hmm. But we had like very natural conversation. But the thing was, she was very passionate about what she did. And the other thing was that she was a public defender, which in the umbrella and the spider web of law, that's not necessarily the most lucrative, but still, you know, it's a professional career. You're making some money.
But isn't it like you defend the voiceless? Like, it's quite a...
Exactly.
And quite that was a, the what's other... the word? Like Robin Hoodie. No, you know, it's like quite a... Yeah. Aggressive, good thing to be doing in society, I guess.
Exactly. I mean, it's very much like the advocate and the advocacy or the advocate and, you know, what law really is. And it was what she was doing. And then also it was this very enlightened professional label, like, you know, she was a lawyer. And I spent the whole date just nodding and, you know, being as present as I could. But I was just like, I was trying to describe what the feeling was. But inside, I mean, I was just going through my every poor decision I had made to not be either a lawyer or making more money than this woman, or happy, basically happy with what I was doing in my life. And
were you happy with what you were doing back then?
I was not. No, okay. No. Okay. Yeah. The woman that I was with, you know, I feel like I was present enough that she didn't have any idea what was going on in my head. But I was like, man, I got to do something. I got to do something. This made me feel emasculated. And I can't just, you know, turn around and make tens of thousands of dollars tomorrow, or tens of thousands of dollars more tomorrow. So what am I going to do? And this really, it was not conscious at all. I was just walking near my neighborhood and there was a car for sale. I had the sale sign and I live in a city, you know, it's just like London. Like there's why the hell would anybody need, especially this was a two-seater, Nas. It was a two-seater car. And I was like, I'm going to buy that. I can afford that. They had the price in the window. I was like, I can buy that. And I realized like, oh my God, this is the date last night. This is why. This is exactly what this came from, is that I have now become the guy. I now understand why men buy sports cars. Like I didn't get it other than I think they're cool and be nice. But I was like, oh, this is why. what else next? Like who am I going to be the guy like the 40 something in a few years at the club? Just like, yeah, you know, like there's just I was like, this is not good. I need to do something. But I understood sort of the idea of number one, vanity. I've always understood, and the threat of vanity. But I understood the that really pointed to a bigger problem culturally, but also personally, where it's like I've had this happen before, where I've felt threatened by a woman's success or her ambition, and I have reacted. Not as strongly necessarily as wanting to go and buy a sports car, but I've, you know, it's been internalized as, for me, a lot of times, like almost a self-hatred sounds really strong, but it's an internalized defeat and real deflation. From that incident, I really sort of, I looked at the bigger picture of my life and also how this happens to a lot of other men.
So you had talked in that episode about a girlfriend from high school and how she had gotten better SAT scores than you, and also about an ex-girlfriend who had a gallery installation, mm-hmm. and about how both of these situations they kind of affected you because they were on some level doing better than where you wanted to be. Mm-hmm. Do you think that affected the way those relationships turned out and kind of maybe even led to them ending?
At this point, I would assume that they had, yeah, I think they had something to do with the demise of our relationships. The thing is, I don't know. I don't know how much withholding my partners had to do, because maybe they sensed that the sharing or a way that they share the information would spark some insecurity in me. And maybe they were very honest, but I'm assuming they weren't, they did do that because, you know, even the most sort of hardened girlfriends that I had that were like really tough, they're very sensitive in terms of their relationships with people in their life. And so I think that they were the same with me, in which they were like, okay, well, if this is going to bother Mark, I'm going to tone it in a certain way, or I'm just not really going to talk about it.
So like walking on eggshells sort of thing?
I assume more so there's one partner that I had in the last 10 years that I feel like maybe she had to do that. It's really shameful behavior. I had one partner and she had, she was doing this Yeah, this art installation, I'll just call it thing. Just going to use the word thing. And it was really awesome. And it was really celebrated. And like people were really excited about it. And I moped, just moped, you know?
During the opening?
Yeah, I just moped. And I was really distant. And, you know, she's like, hey, dude, like, are you present here? Like, and, you know, I feigned. I was like, yeah, I'm just tired, you know, and gave some excuse. But that's shitty. That's awful when you're celebrating something and the person you're closest to. Being sick is one thing, sure. Like, if I have the flu, you know, a partner's be like, dude, go home. It's fine. I totally get it. But one of the things, though, that has contextualized a lot of this for me and which I'm curious about with other people is the term Napoleon complex. I don't think I've ever really fought against it, but I'm like, oh, that's it for me. Like, that's what it is, because I'm not a big guy. And I knew that at a certain age. Like, there's a time in high school, I was like, this is it. Like, I'm not growing any taller than this. And I wasn't an athlete. And so I think some of the ways in which, you know, this was not a conscious decision, but I decided to compete maybe with partners, or a way that I wanted to show my my bravado or my power might be through, you know, ambition or career or money. So this week, my girlfriend and I are about to sign a lease on an apartment. So we're going to move in.
Congratulations.
Thank you. We've never lived together. You know, it's only been about a year.
Mm-hmm.
And to get the apartment, we had to provide proof of income, and we have to be able to match, I think it's 40 times what the monthly rental is.
Wow.
So we had to be able, as a couple, you know, I was positive that we could do that. Without a doubt, I was like, okay, we can do that. You know, I don't know how much you make. I know how much I make, blah, blah, blah. She's been in between things. She's sort of a freelancer and yada, yada, yada. But she just got a full-time job again. And she got it after we saw the apartment. And she said, oh, we're clear now. Like, just based on my salary, we can match that. And that same feeling came back. And I was like, you make over $100,000 a year. I hope I'm not blowing up her spot right now. But I was like, oh my God. I was like, I don't. And to anybody listening, obviously my reaction is, I don't make that. I don't make that much money. I don't make nearly that much money. And money is the hardest thing to talk about with friends, let alone in coupling. I told her, I was like, I'm sorry. I feel weird. You know, I got to be honest, like the immediate part of me feels weird about that.
That she makes that much money?
That she makes that much money and I can't compete.
Mm.
You know, I can't compete with that amount right now. And she's like, I don't care. You know, you're working. You're not a bum. You're not sitting playing PlayStation. Like, you're doing stuff and you work. You're still primarily working at a nonprofit. You're making nonprofit money. She works in television and film production, and so the income that's going to come in from that is going to be substantially different than working at a 501c3, unless I'm at a more senior position. All those details don't matter. What matters is that I spent the day fighting that mopey feeling again, and, you know, that sort of withdrawn. And my head is just going, what my head does when I feel that is like, how can I win here? And not beat her, not make her feel any way, but like, okay, well, what are the areas in my life in which, okay, well, maybe if I get a different job, maybe I need to get a different title, maybe I need to do these things to elevate my status. And yeah, it still happens. I'm more honest about it, and I understand how primal, at least in me, it feels, and that there's a way to acknowledge it and grow from it, but it's still there. And, you know, there's also this just somewhat primal side of like, I want to be able to prove that I can provide and prove that I can take care of myself and other people that are in my life.
Is it about feeling needed? do you think?
It is. Yeah, I think it is. Needed. Of course, there's the power dynamic.
But what's the actual feeling like when you were saying with your girlfriend at the moment when she told you how much you earned? I don't know. Is it the feeling that, you know, she doesn't need me, like, to take care of her, or because I'm not good enough, or I don't know. What's the actual kind of thought or feeling that's going through your mind?
Yeah, it's a feeling of inadequacy. It identifies my worth. If I have a certain status in my career and if that and potentially money, like I really like the feeling of taking care of people. And I don't necessarily think that's a positive thing all the time. I don't think it's a positive thing a lot of the time. I think the impulse to be kind and be like, you know, I'll help and I'm happy to take you out for dinner and things like that. But the sort of this very intentional way.
Because what you're talking about, it's sort of the classic, it's like the classic male dilemma of showing your worth through action and through achievement. Mm-hmm. And now that we're in this sort of era of sort of redefining what it means to be a man, a woman, gender roles, all this stuff, is that kind of playing into this as well at all? Because there's so much discussion about like, oh, but men should also be allowed to show X, Y, Z parts of themselves, and it's not all about achievement and this and that. But maybe these are just discussions and we're still in a theoretical stage and, you know, we still haven't got to a place where men feel like they don't need to just achieve. Do you find ambitious women attractive?
I love ambitious women. That's the problem. Yeah, I don't want to date a loafy lady. Like I want somebody who's doing stuff. Now that means, you know,
because this is the problem. I think this is being on the other side of it. I think this is a cultural problem where a lot of, I guess, quote unquote progressive men, they do find it quite attractive if a woman's ambitious, but then they kind of can't quite handle it, you know.
So yeah, is this like, yeah. Well, my girlfriend's asked me because she's listened to the show, and you know, I'm the way I am with you right now, the way I am with my show and my friends. I'm pretty similar with close people in my life. You know, I like to talk about all these things. So she asks me, she's like, "Oh, I'm ambitious and I'm confident." She goes, "Does that freak you out?" And I tell her about 90% of the truth, which is no, it doesn't. It really doesn't altogether, and especially at this age, like I want to be honest with myself and with anybody who asks. I still face those dilemmas, but that doesn't mean I haven't experienced a lot of growth, and that somebody needs to blanket the way they talk to me about their career or how much money they're making. You don't need to all the time, but there's still 10%, sometimes more, where we're signing a lease and I find out these details and I'm like, I'm sorry, babe. Like, that impulse is there. Mm. So I really like ambitious women. I've, for the most part, I feel like I've dated primarily ambitious women, and you can classify that differently. But women who are passionate about where they're going, what they're doing, what they're currently into. The ambition may not relate necessarily to finances, but, you know, I've dated a lot of artists.
But Mark, are you ambitious?
I am ambitious.
Okay.
I am ambitious, and I think I have some alpha tendencies, but primarily I don't.
Because I've slightly wondered about this, because sometimes maybe going on my own anecdotal data and people I know, I sometimes wonder if sort of sometimes like men are attracted to ambitious women because they feel like it might inspire them to be more ambitious. Mm-hmm. Like, it might inspire them to up their game a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I do agree with that. I've found that in my relationships. I have...
Sort of like I need to prove that I'm good enough. So if I date someone who's really ambitious or really brilliant or something, it's a way that I have to sort of step up and show myself, which isn't necessarily a bad thing either.
No, it's not.
But so what do you think needs to happen if men who like ambitious women are to sort of be able to handle their ambition.
You know, I'm curious to anybody who's listening, but I'm just curious how many, primarily women, how many women have had the men in their lives confide in them in a non-threatening, in a non-confrontational way, just like, your career intimidates me, you know, or your finances. And I want to say this to you in a way that's, I'm not judging you. I am not putting this on you as something you shouldn't be proud of, something that you should hide. I want to acknowledge it. So can we start there? I think that's it for me. Like, that really is it. I think the primary thing is both men, women, and then men. Are you saying that to women in your life? I would start there. I mean, it's really important to, I think, just the acknowledgement, that conversation is the weight that men carry around and what it does to them.
I find that would be a really weird conversation, that if I was on the receiving end of that, I'd feel well, what do you want me to do about it? Like, and I'm not saying that shouldn't happen, but I'd in a way feel like, if a guy said that to me, in a way I'd feel like maybe he's saying, tone it down or don't be your full self because it's freaking me out. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying you're wrong, by the way. I'm just wondering whether that's something that men need to sort out amongst themselves, maybe. I don't know.
I've opened up about like this mental process, and I don't necessarily think that everything needs to be opened up and discussed, but there are details about being a man that I've opened up with, let's say, girlfriends, and I've gotten the response, not all the time, but sometimes, like, I had no idea. Number one, I had no idea. I also had no idea, like, oh, that's sort of like, oh, not that's how men think, but like, interesting. Like, that's how you took that. I see. And then sort of like, I think it would be, if it's helpful for women within that context, within that same sort of answer of like, oh, like, interesting. Like, I had no idea that your brain would have gone there.
Right.
I think that's where it's been helpful for me to be like, okay, here, girlfriend, here's the deal. This is, I just want to acknowledge it. But I also, in relationships, sometimes I just do it to be like, I want to let you know that I'm going to be quiet. If I'm acting weird and quiet, this is the reason.
Okay.
And I'm working through it, and it has nothing to do with you. But I don't want you to sit there and think I'm just withholding or that you did anything. I just have to be honest. This is what's going on. And
so it's more that she has an understanding of where you're at.
Yeah. And I other than that, like, I wouldn't want you, the girlfriend, to be like, well, okay, I'll go to Starbucks and start working. Like, I don't want you to change your life and like or argue for a pay decrease. Like, nothing like that. But I those are the questions that I have, I guess, for men and women. Like, do women, would that be helpful for them to hear? How often are they hearing that or details like that within an intimate context, within a context in which they're already receiving information like that? I'm taking a vulnerable step and really being naked and being like, this makes me feel like I won't be needed. This makes me feel inadequate. And you're doing nothing to make me feel that way. But that's just my brain is doing that. So if it's helpful, it's helpful.
Do you feel like you would be able to have this conversation with many men? Because that's the other question I have, whether it's easier to talk to the woman you're seeing about this rather than talking to close men.
Talking to them, saying, hey, my girlfriend makes more money than me. Do you face this too? Like, and
yeah, it makes me feel inadequate or unneeded, or it freaks me out a little bit. Is that a conversation you feel like you could have with close men in your life?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, full transparency. I work in an office setting, and there are a few colleagues that I've become friends with. You know, we've become close, and so I pulled one of my male colleagues aside the other day, and we just talked in the hallway, and I was like, also because I know that his wife makes more than him, a lot more, and so we went and got Trader Joe's, like, we went to the grocery store and had this very, it was ridiculously like stereotypical New York two guys talking, like, hey, so your girlfriend makes more money than you, blah, blah. You know, like, but it's there, and I'm happy to approach that with, even if it wasn't with him, but with other men, and saying, like, I think there's a power in just the nakedness that we can all do. And I don't have as much an issue with that as I do sometimes being completely vulnerable and open with my partner about my the deeper feelings of inadequacy at times.
Is the problem more that you want to be doing as well as or better than the woman you're seeing, full stop? Or is it more that you feel a social pressure that you should be doing that great, that you should be doing better than her? Because the first one is more of a personal thing of, like, you want to always be, I don't know, doing well, ambitious, feeling passionate about what you're doing. The second one is more about how society perceives you and your position.
I think I want to say that I fall more into the second category of, like, you know, culturally, society, et cetera. But no, there are times where I want to be doing better than the other person. And I think there's a competition, there's a esteem, you know, there's a misguided, misdirected self-esteem that comes from that. So I think the darker impulse comes from time to time where I want to just be more powerful in that way. And that's where I'm getting, you know, my ego. But for the most part, I think it's mostly cultural. I do think that's an honest answer, is that I feel a sort of, I didn't realize it. I almost bought a freaking sports car. I never thought I'd be that guy. And there's obviously a societal pressure. Like, I'm not, you know, we've never met face to face. You've talked to me, you've listened. I'm not a sports car guy. So like, for me to go there, I mean, it would have been cool, but I'm not automatically that guy. So go ahead.
When you say the other person, that specifically I'm talking about the woman you're seeing, is that who you mean? You want to be doing better than the woman that you're seeing?
Specifically the woman that I'm seeing, correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to be doing better than her. Mm-hmm. And I think the deeper impulse, or the bigger impetus, is it's just wanting to be doing, getting too much identity from my career, how much I'm making, just culturally at this point. Mm-hmm. And that officially I don't think is very healthy, just for all of us.
You heard from Mark Begon on this episode of The Gender Knot.
It was hosted by me. I'm Nasrin Tavakoli-Farr, or Naz in short.
And it was hosted by me. I'm Jonathan Blackwell. Our fabulous, brilliant
co-producers... You're Jonathan Freeman.
Did I just say I'm Jonathan Blackwell?
Yeah. We're going to keep
Jonathan
this in.
Blackwell,
we're going
to
keep this in.
Jonathan Blackwell needs to change his name. Anyway. And it was hosted by me. I'm Jonathan Freeman. Our brilliant, fabulous co-producers are Sam Baker and Jonathan Blackwell. And on today, when we are recording, it is my fabulous niece's birthday, so happy birthday, Lenny.
We'll be back next week with more. Bye for now.
Talk to you later.